Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Thursday, September the 3rd, 2026. 9:03:26, 17 minutes past the hour. And we want to thank the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, for joining us in hour number one. And this hour, we are equally pleased to have the guests that we have. With 60 days left to go until the big election, 60 days from today, we will all head to the polls on Election Day to elect a new governor here in Ohio and see what happens in that big Senate race between Sherrod Brown and John Husted and a whole bunch of other elections and issues going on across the state. Nobody better I'd have with us this morning than our guest. He is the last elected two-term Democratic governor of the state of Ohio. Always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones former governor Dick Celeste. Governor Celeste, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Scott, and it's great to hear your voice and be with you this morning.
Governor Celeste, 60 days left to go here in Ohio. What's your general feeling on things?
You know, actually, it's not even 60 days because early voting starts in just over 30 days, I think, and so there'll be people voting in another few weeks. I have a tremendous respect for the people of Ohio. I spent 20 years in public service in Ohio. I traveled the state from corner to corner, from the lake to the river, east and west. I spent time in every county and loved my time in Marion County. And I think Ohio voters are very smart. And sometimes politicians make assumptions about their ability to manipulate them that I don't think will be the case. I mean, my feeling is that certainly in the governor's race, we have a very authentic candidate in Amy Acton, and I call him a synthetic candidate with a lot of money and a very articulate fellow in running in opposition to her. You know, Ohioans, we talk about states as red and blue. Most Ohioans think of themselves as independents. Many of them are non-declared voters. That's the biggest political party across the state. And they make up their minds based on what they hear from the candidates and how they see the candidates and whether they feel the candidates are really going to work on their behalf. And I say this because in 1978, when I ran for governor, I was defeated, and I realized that I did not deserve to win that election. Now, Ohioans understood I probably wasn't ready to be governor in 1978. But in 1982 and 1986, they supported me very strongly. I was ready to be governor, and we had a good relationship, and the fact that voters supported me strongly, enabled me to work with Democrats and Republicans in the legislature to get good things done for Ohio. I think Amy Acton's going to be able to do the same thing.
You know, Governor Celeste, one of the interesting things about this race is with 60 days left to go, usually we start to see some trends happening in the polls, but this governor's race for a long time has more or less been tied. Why do you think it has been so tight, and what do you think in the next 60 days could separate these two candidates?
You know, in the first place, I think that Ohio, for the last two decades, has been controlled by the Republican Party across the board. I mean, it's all the statewide offices and both houses of the legislature. So there is a sense that, well, this is the way we are. I think that's the price that the state has paid for that attitude has been incredible corruption and self-dealing and cronyism in Columbus. But I think most voters are going to make up their minds in this last 60 days. We've seen the Republican candidate spend literally millions and millions of dollars, most of it to try to say things which are untrue charges about his opposition. And I think that ordinary Ohioans are going to see that for what it is. It's a desperate act by a man whose wealth is obscene, who thinks that the way to campaign is to fly around the state in a private jet. And in the end, it's going to come down to turnout. And I don't think people are going to be motivated to turn out for him in the way that they're going to be motivated to turn out for Dr. Atkins.
You know, Governor Celeste, we got an interesting ripple in this race yesterday because people had long been wondering, would there be debates for this gubernatorial race? And I'm just going to read this as it is. We got a press release from Vivek Ramaswamy early in the day yesterday that said Vivek Ramaswamy has formally agreed to participate in debates against his Democrat gubernatorial opponent, Amy Acton. His campaign recently received two debate invitations from CNN and WLWT. A local NBC News affiliate in Ohio, Vivek has accepted both invitations. Ohioans deserve a substantive debate between their two candidates for governor. I challenge Amy Acton to join me on the debate stage so voters can make a well-informed choice in November, said Ramaswamy. To support broad public access, WLWT will make the debate available via satellite at no cost to media outlets in Ohio, including television and radio stations as well as newspapers. It will also be streamed on WLWT.com's streaming platform, very local. The Ramaswamy campaign is awaiting word if Acton plans to participate, and within a couple hours, we did hear from the Amy Acton campaign. This was from a press release from Amy Acton's campaign. Dr. Acton's focus is on talking with Ohioans, not platforming a scam artist who spreads baseless lies about her and her family, uses AI to falsely paint her as someone with a substance abuse problem, and shames Dr. Acton for being sexually abused as a child while Vivek stands with predators and abusers. Ramaswamy and his billionaire buddies have spent more than $50 million on disgusting and accurate attack ads that have been condemned as the most vile and repulsive lies Ohio has ever seen, said Acton campaign manager Phil Stein. So it doesn't look like we're going to see any debates in this gubernatorial race. What did you make of this, Governor Celeste?
Well, I think Ramaswamy wants debates because he's desperate. His dishonest TV ads have not accomplished what he wanted, and he feels like he's very good on the debate stage. Now, you should remember his presidential debates because after the first debate he was out of the race. I think in the end there will be an opportunity for Ohioans to see the two candidates side by side. We'll see what that framework is and how it's put together, but I would not be surprised to see Dr. Acton can stand up to Vivek Ramaswamy, because look, when you're telling the truth, when you're comfortable with who you are, when you have a feel for the state of Ohio in the way that she does, there's every reason for her to be able to stand side by side with a guy who really is a snake oil salesman. 120 years ago, if he'd come into any Ohio town, if he pulled his little wagon into Marion County, people would have listened to him for 15 minutes and then chased him out of town. And I think he may be asking for something that he'll regret down the line. We'll see.
Now that's interesting, Governor Celeste. So even though it looks as if the Acton campaign has turned down the debates from CNN and WLWT, you think within the next 60 days we are going to see these two on stage together?
I wouldn't be surprised, Scott, at all.
And what kind of format do you think that would be?
Well, I have no idea. I mean, I'm I'm a long way from the two campaigns. I look at it from 30,000 feet, not on the ground, and so I can't venture a guess to that. But I think that there will be an opportunity, and hopefully Ohioans will pay close attention to who is genuine and who is not, because I think that is going to be the key to leadership in the future. And by the way, the kind of cronyism grip that has been there in the Capitol for the last 15 or 16 years, for sure, every time that Ramaswamy says we've got to do something to bring about change, he's criticizing this gang that has run things in Columbus. I just have a lot of confidence in Ohioans and their common sense. And I think this is a change election, and Amy Acton is the change candidate. She will deliver for Ohioans who have no idea what $1 billion even looks like, let alone, you know, what kind of a life you lead when you have that kind of money. It's obscene.
Governor Celeste, if we do not get to see these two on stage in some kind of format in the next 60 days, do you think that would be a mistake?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, I think that the candidates have to decide how they want to present themselves, and that's the task they have. Amy Acton has been doing that in very up close and personal ways as she travels around the state. I think more and more Ohioans have gotten to know her personally, and I think she has an incredibly devoted following of volunteers and supporters who are going to talk to their friends and neighbors about what they know about her and why they're confident in her leadership. Now, whether she decides that it's important for the people of Ohio to see them side by side on the stage is another matter. I think this is a desperate act on the part of Vivek Ramaswamy, because his millions and millions and millions of television dollars haven't worked.
It's these attack ads that you have seen, are they some of the worst that you've ever seen? You've seen a lot come down the pike.
I remember in 1986, in my re-election campaign, Jim Rhodes did an attack ad that had to do essentially with my wife and myself. And John Glenn and I stood in front of an American flag and said, "This is not what politics is about." And I remember John afterwards saying, "You know, I love being in public life. I love campaigning with people. When this happens, it really sickens the system." And I have not seen anything as crude and vicious and dishonest as the kind of ads that Vivek Ramaswamy is running. And, you know, that says something about the person. When you're doing that, it's fine to criticize someone, criticize their ideas, cite something in their experience that is real. He criticizes her for her actions on COVID when he himself was recommending far more stringent actions. Now, that's the kind of cynicism that we don't need in public life. And my own feeling is that more and more Ohioans will sense that, and it's time for them to take a broom and sweep everyone out in Columbus who's been there for the last 10 or 15 years, get a change that will be good for the state of Ohio.
You know, Governor Celeste, you bring up an interesting point there. In the first hour, your friend and mine, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, was on the program, and something that distresses her greatly wasn't so much that Amy Acton was not going to compete in a debate, it's that she has not answered these attack ads. As you said, you answered Governor Rhodes' attack ad in the 1980s. Do you think Amy Acton should be more proactive in addressing these ads that say things about prescription drug use, alcohol, COVID, all these things that are being said?
I don't think she needs to. I mean, there. It's for people like you and me to make clear what we see as distinction. I mean, where we see something that's false, we should call it out for being false. It shouldn't be her job just to do that on her own. And I think Vivek would like nothing more than for her to be trying to correct the record rather than talking about what she's going to do about public education. His policy would destroy public schools in Ohio. He's supported by somebody, a billionaire in Pennsylvania, who wants to destroy public education across the country and sees Ohio as the testbed for that effort. And so, you know, the more Ramaswamy can keep Amy from talking about public education, the better for him. He wants to talk about getting rid of property taxes. There's not a state in the nation that's done that. And, well, then he starts to back away. He talks about consolidating universities, and he hems and haws about, you know, which one and where. This is a man with no principle, none. And those ads are a reflection of his lack of principle. And I think it's our job, it's the job of all of us who care about Ohio, to call that out, not just to leave it on Amy Acton, because she wants to talk about the things that Ohioans care about. And she has nothing to be ashamed, absolutely nothing. I mean, she says she's a tough girl from Youngstown, Ohio, who had a tough young life and came through it, worked her way into college and med school, has been a doctor and practiced in a way that serves the public, doesn't make big money for her because she was a specialist of some kind or another. Meanwhile, this guy, you know, a fraudulent business career, had a company in Ohio, which he moved to Texas, and has the gall to say he wants to serve the people of Ohio. He only wants to serve himself and his friends. And I believe the people of Ohio will realize that.
Governor Celeste, I want to read this. I want to touch on this before we go to this next story. Something that has caught people's attention here in Ohio. We have a ballot issue coming up this fall. Issue 3. Essentially, that would make voter identification part of the Ohio Constitution. Now, it is already law in Ohio, but it would make it part of the Constitution, which would make it hard to get rid of. That's what Issue 3 is all about in kind of a condensed format. Vivek Ramaswamy is for Issue 3. Robert Sprague, running for Secretary of State, is for Issue 3. Alison Russo, the Democrat running for Secretary of State, is not for Issue 3. The Ohio Democratic Party Chair, Kathleen Clyde, is not for Issue 3. But Amy Acton is for Issue 3. That surprised a lot of people. What do you make of that?
Well, she has that. I'm proud of her for making her own decisions. I think what she said is that she would see to it that the state provided voter ID cards for anyone who didn't have a passport or didn't have something that would serve as the proper ID. You know, I mean, that's on the ballot. It's on the ballot as an effort to create a distraction. I mean, these guys who've been in charge in Columbus have no respect for the people of Ohio. So you have to put in the Constitution something which is already Ohio law. Well, okay, so put it in the Constitution. If Amy Acton supports that, I respect her for articulating her position. If Democrats, and I understand why Democrats feel that it's a ploy on the part of Republicans, but in the end, whoever's going to become governor and whoever's going to become Secretary of State will have the responsibility for implementing that law. And if you implement it in the way that Amy Acton wants to, no Ohioan will be denied the opportunity to vote because they lack a voter ID. And that's the question. Who do you want in charge of this system? I'd rather have Amy Acton and Alison Russo than the gang who've been running things, running Ohio into the ground for the last dozen or so years.
And just to reinforce what Governor Celeste here, I do want to read what Amy Acton's quote on issue three was. She said, the amendment has overwhelming support from Ohioans across the state, as this doesn't change what is already law. As governor, I will support it. At the same time, as both a candidate and governor, I will fight to ensure that all eligible Ohio voters, regardless of party, can access the required identification easily and at no cost, so they can exercise their fundamental right and have their voices heard. That is what Amy Acton has said on issue three. Governor Celeste, obviously you don't live here in Ohio anymore, but if you were here, would you vote for issue three?
When I voted, I usually kept my votes private, Scott, but I would probably hold my nose and vote for issue three. I'm not sure it's the kind of thing that belongs in the ballot. That's I suspect why Alison Russo and Kathleen Clyde and others have opposed it. We have far more of a constitution. You know, the wonderful thing about the United States Constitution is it's relatively short. If you look at the Ohio Constitution, it's like a textbook, and it needs an index. And so my hunch is that I probably would not vote for it, but that I'm not going to campaign on this issue, and as I say, I think the whole issue is a distraction.
So just to be clear, if you did live here, you would not vote for issue three?
I'm not sure how I would vote. I'd tell you afterwards how I voted.
I understand. I'm going to read this from beginning to end because I think this is an important story in regard to what happened over in Springfield earlier this week. Hours before Ohio College student and athlete Pierre Damas Bell took his own life, he called his father for help. It was around 8 a.m. and he was sitting inside his car on the side of Interstate 70, struggling mentally and emotionally with the shame of being forced to wear an ankle monitor by immigration officials. Bell, a 20-year-old student at Wright State University, said he had been bullied at school and felt humiliated by the device. I told him to come home so we can talk, Bell's father said in an emailed statement. Around 11, the police showed up at my door to report that my son threw himself under a truck. On Monday morning, Bell stepped into oncoming traffic and died from his injuries, the Ohio State Highway Patrol said. His family blamed the humiliation brought on by the ankle monitor he had been wearing since July. Carl Ruby, a local pastor and immigration advocate, said in a statement that Bell's family wanted people to know it was a suicide related to immigration policies. Bell arrived in the U.S. in 2024 and applied for admission into the country using the now defunct CBP One app, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, said in an emailed statement. He was released into the country and settled in Springfield with his parents and two brothers. The future seemed bright. Things began to change July 29th when ICE placed him in an alternatives to detention program with an ankle monitor while he continued his immigration proceedings. He documented the experience on social media, writing July 30th that he came to this country to study, not to commit a crime or hurt anyone. Yet now I'm walking through the streets of the United States with a GPS monitor on my leg, carrying a feeling of shame and humiliation that I never imagined I would experience, he wrote. Bell was one of the roughly 300,000 Haitian nationals living in the U.S. who lost their temporary protected status, or TPS, at the end of July following a Supreme Court decision. The policy change triggered a wave of fear and confusion in Springfield, where 12,000 Haitians live. Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, has criticized the Trump administration's harsh immigration enforcement and its impact on Ohio residents. On Tuesday, he called Bell's suicide a horrible tragedy that never should have happened. I think we have to ask ourselves, is this really good? Is it what we want done to people like this being picked up and facing deportation? Do we want that being done in our name? Said Governor Mike DeWine. What do you make, Governor Celeste, of this story?
I think the governor is absolutely right on this issue. My father was brought to this country when he was 9 months old from Italy by illiterate parents. His dad worked in a steel mill for all of his life. He I can't imagine what it would have been like for him to be challenged while he was going to the College of Worcester to get his bachelor's degree or going to Case Western to get his law degree. I think what the Trump administration has done in demonizing immigrants is an affront to the history of our country, and it places people who've come here with a dream because they believe that we offered something that the rest of the world didn't, and now we're turning that dream into a nightmare. And it is shame on us. Shame on any of us who let that happen. I admire the people, Pastor Ruby, anyone else in Springfield who are working to protect Haitians there. I admire those who are challenging the work of ICE. I think it's fair to enforce our laws at the border. I think it's certainly important to find criminals who are in this country illegally and committing crimes and deport them. But I think what's been happening is an outrage, and it's being done in our names, and shame on us for letting it happen. My heart goes out to this family. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, I have seven kids. I can't imagine what would happen if I had a kid who had to go through something like this. I think it's just shocking. And I know that most of the people in Springfield are dismayed, and I'm sure trying in their ways, best ways they can, to protect people. But there's an intent, in my view, an evil intent to demonize immigrants and to dehumanize them. I'm a Methodist. I'm not a Catholic, but I'm a huge admirer of Pope Leo, the first American Pope, on this issue, because these are strangers. We need to welcome them, and when they come in peace, for us to shackle them, for us to shame them, for us to deport them, is un-American activity, and it should end.
You know,
more power to Mike DeWine. Let me just say that. More power to Governor Mike DeWine.
Well, and I want to ask you about Governor DeWine, because particularly on this issue, he has been very critical of the Trump administration. He also has defended Amy Acton, saying the buck stops with him on how COVID was handled, defending her in many of the attack ads by the Ramaswamy campaign. He also is the first governor in Ohio, while governor, to call on the legislature to abolish the death penalty. Mike DeWine has done a lot of very interesting things that people feel maybe he would not have done earlier in his career. What do you make of Governor DeWine's 8 years that are about to wrap up as governor?
Well, I think he's done the best that he could with the legislature, people in his own party in the legislature who were the hardest folks for him to deal with often. I don't agree with the governor on everything that he's done, and you know, that's understandable. But I certainly welcome and appreciate his voice on behalf of Haitian immigrants and addressing the failures or the cruel nature of what this administration is doing on immigration. Number two, I agree with him. I certainly worked to get the legislature to end capital punishment. I voted against when I was in the legislature. I think a penalty of life without parole is a sufficient and just penalty for those who are convicted of first-degree murder. I certainly support him on that. I think I'm not surprised by his statements on Dr. Acton. After all, he recruited her. He worked side by side with her. He knows about her devotion to the people of Ohio, and I think his advice to her was sound advice. We were the first, Ohio was the first state to close schools, and it was the first state to reopen schools. And it, the studies that have been done showed that Ohio, that the actions taken by the state of Ohio under Governor DeWine's leadership reduced the number of deaths percentage-wise by substantial numbers versus almost any other state in the country. So I think that the way in which, I want to go back to the current campaign, Ramaswamy's lies about his views on COVID and Amy Acton's views on COVID is just one more example of how unsuited he is to be governor. And he's smart, he's slick, he's got a lot of cash, but man, he is that snake oil salesman, and I believe that Ohioans are going to smell that out, and they're going to vote for Amy Acton.
You know, Governor Celeste, it's very interesting because if you look at Ohio's landscape right now, we do not have a Democrat in statewide office. Now, in the not too distant past, you were a two-term governor. We had Senator...
Wait a minute, Scott. I left office in 1991. That's 35 years ago.
I guess we did have Governor Strickland in there for a term.
Yeah.
But we had Senators Glenn. You mentioned Senator Glenn. We had Mary Ellen Withrow in there for three terms as treasurer. We had Senator Metzenbaum. There were a lot of Democrats in office in the states. Rich Cordray was the treasurer at one point.
Yeah.
What happened, in your opinion? How did we get to where we
are? I think the Ohio Democratic Party, as it was organized, was not up to the task. I think we didn't put forward maybe the best candidates for office from time to time. Rich ran a very strong campaign, I must say, for governor. I don't know, because I've been away, and I'm probably not the best observer to try to figure out what we didn't do, what didn't get done during that period of time. Things have changed dramatically. I mean, when I was elected, we didn't have all of the social media that we have today. We barely had cell phones. In fact, when I started, we didn't have a GPS, and I had to stop and ask people for directions if I was on my way to Knock 'em Stiff, Ohio, or someplace that was new to me. So there's been that change. We've had Citizens United since I ran for office, and so what I thought was an expensive gubernatorial campaign with $6 million or $7 million spent, now they're spending $60 million or $70 million on one side. And it's changed the nature of the political enterprise. And one of the things that excites me about the Acton campaign is that she's reaching out to people, not just using technology and WhatsApp or Instagram, whatever, all the things that young people use these days. She's seeing people, face-to-face, and she's talking to them face-to-face, and she's asking people to engage in what I call relational campaigning, which is the way it used to be, when a precinct committee person knew everybody in their precinct and could tell you well in advance of an election how everybody was going to vote. In the meantime, parties have gotten, I think, weaker. I mean, I think if you look at how people feel about the Democratic or Republican Party, you'll see pretty low ratings. And when you look at voter registration, people are overwhelmingly undeclared. Well, I mean, in Ohio, it's from 5 million or more undeclared voters. Now, maybe they tend to vote Republican or tend to vote Democrat, but they think of them, they don't really identify with party. So it's a new era.
It's certainly, and Governor Celeste, to that point, something that's interesting to me, this election cycle in particular, is we have this Senate race between Sherrod Brown and John Husted, and it is a very close race. I think Sherrod Brown has pulled ahead in the polls a little bit, but it's a close race, and there are attack ads there, and people do talk about it, but there is so much more attention on this governor's race, so many more attack ads if you watch television or pay attention to the internet. There are much more news stories generated by this governor's race, and I go out and ask people, I say, how do you feel about the governor's race? And the thing I hear more than anything else is that neither of the gubernatorial candidates have ever been elected to any office. How do you think we got to that point? And why do you think this race gets so much attention?
Well, there are two different questions. I think the race gets so much attention because you have a clear contrast between a candidate with unlimited funds and a candidate with a rare life story. And so you've got a really interesting juxtaposition. I think, you know, political experience is not the most important thing that a leader requires to govern effectively. I think public service experience is important. And Amy Acton has devoted her life to public service. She's worked closely side by side with a governor. She understands what state government is about. But the real core is what are the values that drive someone? What is their core about? And in all of Amy Acton's, I think her life story is about how to improve the lives of those around her. How does, you know, it's public health, but public health in the biggest sense of the word. And that's what she's devoted herself to. And Ramaswamy has devoted himself to making money, to greed and greed and glory, I would call it. And so, you know, why are there so many attack ads? Because he's got unlimited funds, and he's got nothing positive to say. So he's desperate. So now he wants a debate. This is a desperate man who realizes that no matter how hard he tries, his lies are not going to sink the candidacy of Amy Acton. And over time, I think they're going to backfire against him. I think people are going to get sick and tired of that.
Governor Celeste, in our final 7 minutes here, I want to ask you, because you were, I believe, the first major political figure in Ohio's history to endorse Amy Acton way back. When you first met her, because you don't live here in Ohio anymore, as you've said, when you first met her and talked to her, what jumped out at you? What made her, to you, the person to be the next governor?
So I didn't meet Amy Acton personally, but I got to know her during COVID because Governor DeWine asked me, alongside Bob Taft, another former governor, to help advise him in his decisions around COVID. And in trying to help him, I interacted with this public health director named Dr. Amy Acton. And I regularly tuned in to the press conferences that Governor DeWine and his lieutenant governor would hold for the people of Ohio. And generally he would make a few introductory comments and then he'd turn it over to this woman named Amy Acton. And I watched how she delivered sometimes difficult advice to Ohioans, how she provided comfort and thoughtful information and really helped people, kind of helped sort of hold the hands of a state during a difficult period of time. So I saw her indirectly for all of that period. And I made a point when I was, you know, as I still have a home in Ohio. I mean, I have an apartment in Cleveland and three of my kids and my ex-wife and my sister all live in Ohio, so I feel like I still have deep roots in Ohio, and I come back on a regular basis. And so I made a point of going to visit her, and what I realized is that during this period of the COVID crisis, she had formed a unique relationship with the people of Ohio, and literally thousands of Ohioans had reached out to her and said that they appreciated the leadership she provided. And I encouraged her to think about public service. I said, you have a gift of communicating in a way that is genuine and can bring people together. And we talked about, you know, what healing is, and I encouraged her to think about public office. And so I was pleased when I encouraged her to think about a Senate race in the race that that Tim Ryan lost. But she didn't feel like she was ready for it, and instead she spent quite a bit of time that year about helping candidates and getting around the state to see what it felt like to be a candidate. And I think that helped her when she started to think about running for governor. So I think she knows that you have to build a team. She knows that in order to make real change in Ohio, it's going to take Ohioans working together and not just a governor and members of the legislature. And she knows that people power is more important than money power. You know, these are things that are, I think, critical ingredients to a successful leadership in our state. I still consider it our state.
No, and I think we all do. With 3 minutes left to go, I have two quick questions here. There are other offices. We have Alison Russo for Secretary of State. We have Seth Walsh for Treasurer. We have John Kulowitz for Attorney General. I know you have endorsed some other Democratic candidates. How do you feel about the slate here in Ohio on the Democratic side?
I think it's a terrific slate. They bring a variety of perspectives. You didn't mention Annette Blackwell, who may be the sleeper in the slate, because she is terrific. She took the city of Maple Heights, and which was about to go into receivership, and she's gotten four clean audits in a row there. She's running for auditor. She's worked more closely with the state auditor than any candidate, I think, for auditor in the past. And here you've got all faces, really. People who would bring new energy and vision to the job. And what you got on the Republican side is people playing musical chairs. I mean, they run from one office to another. There was term limits were supposed to improve the quality of public service. I think term limits has had a terrible effect.
And our final question this morning here, Governor Celeste, we know you support Amy Acton. We know that you want her to win, but you've seen a lot of gubernatorial races go over the hill here. Some have been won by Democrats. Some have not in Ohio. You won two yourself in the 1980s. At this point, with 60 days left to go before Election Day, how confident are you that Amy Acton will win this race?
I'm very confident that the people of Ohio will make the right choice.
And the right choice
is Amy Acton.
And with 30 seconds, why is she the right choice?
Well, she knows and loves the state in an authentic way. And to choose a very smart and a very slick and a very well-heeled fake to lead the state of Ohio would be a tragedy. And I think people of Ohio will avoid that tragedy, and they will choose Dr. Acton. And I think Ohio will have a tremendous future as she works together with the legislature and a Democratic team.
Governor Celeste, you said earlier in the interview that you still think of Ohio as our state. I know a lot of people feel that you are still an Ohioan, and if not that, an honorary Ohioan for all that you've done here. You come back regularly, and you do come on this show, and I certainly appreciate your candor and being media-friendly, because people do want to hear from you, so I can't thank you enough for coming on this program today.
I'm delighted, Scott. It's great to talk with you, and I'm only sorry that I'm not going to be in Marion when we celebrate Mary Ellen Withrow in a very special way. Congratulations on that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Governor Celeste, and hopefully we'll get to talk one more time before the election.
I hope so. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Former Governor of Ohio Dick Celeste, always a good person to talk to with 60 days left to go until Election Day. Voice of a People with Linda Sims comes up next, 10:15 till 12 noon. And then, I believe, Adam the Computer Guy, 12 to 1. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And the grand prize game. Oh, my goodness. How could we ever forget that?